when we get to discernment in the last class, I'm going to indicate that that affective state is worth paying attention to as a source of information on our decisions. St. Ignatius, in his talk of discernment, is dealing with affectivity through and through. He talks of three moments of making a choice, and the second one is the one that deals with affectivity, and all of his rules for discernment have to do with that second time of making an election. So it's everything he's talking about on discernment, he's talking about affectivity. Right?
Is it possible for a person to be marvelously poised and evil?
No, I would say not. It's possible for a person to seem to be marvelously poised. I don't think so. I think there's a denial. Probably, well, I don't know. It probably could go either way. But I don't think so. Not in the sense in which I'm talking about the choice of living in the in-between. Evil in the sense of the the fundamental option that the person is making. Yes.
People seem to find it amusing when you talk about someone saying to themselves, "No, I choose the poised balance." I'm not so sure that it's all that inadvertent when someone is concerned with wholeness.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I think we would use that word about ourselves, and I think that's what you're talking about.
It is, okay. And you know, I think at those moments when our constitution of ourselves is the issue, you know, then we might use it.
If you're going to pursue doctoral studies, you want a membership of Dick Kennedy.
But, yeah, I mean, I think it's true that these... Yeah, but you see, even there, their explicit focus is, do I get this membership? Do I take care of my other needs? You see? But I think it's possible that we can make this an explicit focus. We can. I think that once you get into the whole issue of self-appropriation that we're talking about, that's exactly what you're doing. So you're taking the self and its makeup as the object of your decision. But what I'm trying to maintain is that even when the self and its makeup are not the object of my decisions, they are involved. And I am concomitantly constituting myself in a certain way in certainly every fundamental decision that I make, every basic decision. There is also a self-constitution that's involved. The decision might be about constituting the world explicitly, you see, but it has to do, it involves the constitution. But you're right, I can explicitly take this as the object of my decisions. And the final point that I want to make is that I believe that the movement from one fundamental option to another is always a matter of conversion and cooperation with grace, and it's not something that a person does on his or her own efforts exclusively. Again, that brings us right back to the whole issue that I started with in discussing this problem of good and evil, that the redemptive solution is the only solution. And that my participation in the struggle against evil is a cooperation with redemptive grace. It is not my doing. Okay, one final comment. Until I came to wrestle with these problems, I thought that the first principle in the Thomistic ethics that I learned back in the early 60s, the first principle of Thomistic ethics, at least as we learned it, was in Latin, bonum faciendum malum vitandum. Good is to be done and evil to be avoided. I thought that that was true but banal and obvious. But after wrestling with the problem as it comes to the surface in one strand of psychology, I think it's a profoundly relevant principle to the modern ideological scene that we're dealing with. And this whole question of particularly ambitioning a state beyond good and evil is prevalent in modern culture. It is enunciated in so many words, as I've indicated, by Nietzsche. And I think it involves the whole amputation of that scale of values that I spoke of in the last class. I think that you could draw a connection between envisioning a state beyond good and evil and the collectivism that we're into in the first and second worlds today. But possibly in future work I might be able to get to that point. I'm not there yet.
Is Nietzsche more acute in his sense of evil than Junger?
Yeah, I think so. I think his envisioning of a condition beyond good and evil is precisely at the root of his own madness. And his anticipation that the human race was going to reach a point where it wanted to reach a point beyond good and evil, that's what really drove him crazy. But he saw what would come when it got to that point. And what would come would be what he calls the Übermensch, the Superman. But what is, in fact, the destruction of humanity? It's not something beyond humanity, it's something less than humanity. It's the amputation of the scale of values. So that the only values that are publicly acknowledged are social order and particular vital values. And then you're right into the collectivism at that point. Right into a collective ideologies, whether you're capitalist or communist ideologies. Okay, let me press.
I didn't get a connection between your Bonpachindom and Henri Tondo.
I thought, when I first learned that, I just remembered as I was writing these notes. You know, when I first was taught that principle, I thought, well, sure, but so what? I mean, it seems so obvious and so vain. But the point of it is that there's a certain attitude to be taken towards those contradictories that is extremely important and extremely relevant on the contemporary scene, because there are ideologies available to us today that would precisely deny that. The bonum faciendum, malum vitam. They would say bonum faciendum and malum faciendum.
Okay.
And hopefully, you know, you go tripping gaily along until you reach a point of integration between it.
That's
an illusion. It's just an
illusion.
Yes.
It's kind of like on my last point, the rejection of the poised equilibrium, which is evil, still to have a positive sense or force still with you, or is it a negative? Absence is something else.
The rejection of...
Well, what you said, the rejection of the poison equilibrium was evil.
Yeah.
So in other words, I'm saying, is there a positive, is there a substance of called evil in the world?
Oh, you mean in terms of... No, I don't... I mean, I think what I'm saying is what is along the lines of what Aquinas was getting at with the privatio morti, you see.
Okay?
That it's not to say there isn't evil in the world. But what is that evil in its intrinsic constitution? It is the absence of the poised equilibrium. That's what makes a choice evil, it's the absence of the poised equilibrium. Now, all the reality that is in that choice is still there.
Yeah.
And it's not denied. And it's not denied by Aquinas. But what is the imminent intrinsic intelligibility that enables you to call that choice evil? The absence of
just like you were worried about people misinterpreting Jung, he was worried about Christianity misinterpreting evil as just calling it an absence, so they didn't give it enough credence, right?
Jung himself was.
Yeah,
yes,
of course.
He was. Now, you know, Victor White argued with Jung on this, and he told him over and over again, you're misinterpreting Augustine and Aquinas, and Jung couldn't see it. You know, he couldn't see that he was misinterpreting. But I think he was. I really do. Okay. Next class is Kierkegaard and then...